I'm 46. The 29th of April, 1999, to the 28th of April, 2000. Over. The End of the World by Gary Fowles. 1999 was a strange year. There was something in the air. If you were around back then you'll remember how it was. Every now and then, something just happens, a collective feeling where everyone, from the bullied kids in the playground to the half-asleep gentry in the House of Lords, become consumed by the same notion. Beatlemania, Diane Doody, or Brexit. You know the sort of thing. That's how 1999 was. The whole world was gripped by millennium fever. It was everywhere you looked. Small businesses slapped 2000 at the end of their name in a misguided attempt to be part of what was happening. There was no escaping it. Apparently, the Mayans had somehow predicted that the world was going to end due to computers not being able to cope with the complexity of 1999 becoming 2000. The theory went that as clocks chimed midnight around the globe, a domino effect was going to take place. Planes were going to drop from the skies, power stations would start to melt down, and the world as we knew it would grind to a halt, all to the sound of Jules Holland's boogie-woogie piano. I spent most of that summer battling away invitations to appear on various end-of-the-century roundup shows. The broadsheets and various TV and radio shows wanted me to waffle on about popular culture and my part in its downfall. The more I declined, the more the offers came. The thing is, I was at a crossroads. I'd spent most of the previous year writing and rewriting 45, spending far too much time looking backwards rather than forwards. Once my publishers had the finished manuscript, then their suggestions for how to promote the book began to arrive. Creating is joyous. It's what sets us apart from the rest of God's creatures. Promotion is less joyous, though. I had agreed to write a book, not publicise it. The suggestion was for me to do the usual round of interviews with the usual publications, and then head off to do assorted book readings up and down the country. You need to have a lot of sugar in your tea when it comes to that sort of thing. Trudging around Britain's bookshops was just too unimaginative. Promotion should be as creative as the work. Otherwise, what's the point? As for interviews, did I really want to answer questions about things I'd literally just written about? Plus, I suspected that after the initial clever opening question, followed by a couple about my writing process to soften me up a little, the interviewer would, through what they considered a clever piece of sleight of hand, move on to questions about money being burnt, sheep being dumped, and how I hooked up with the First Lady of Country. All of which is why I had written 45 in the first place, so that I wouldn't have to rake over all that ever again. There has to be a better way of dodging this, I wrote back to the publisher. They didn't think there was. We hit an impasse. Talking of which, 1999 wasn't just a strange year because people felt the need to have an opinion about the Millennium Dome. It was also one of those rare years for me where I didn't manage to get anything finished. Usually, I have several projects ticking away on the stove, which I'll keep returning to, giving them a stir, dropping in fresh ingredients when needed, until one of them starts to take shape. There's never any great overarching plan. just an idea that grows and something else, which then becomes something else. Before you know it, you're off. You need to have your antennae out. Be receptive, observant, and ready to act straight away. Gut feeling every time. Don't overthink things. There'll be plenty of time for all that afterwards when you're trying to make sense of what you did. The only tangible thing on my horizon was the offer to curate the following summer's Meltdown Festival at London South Bank. I emailed back that it wasn't really my sort of thing. But then the dangled carrot of being told that I could put together my dream festival lineup with absolutely no consideration for commercialism got the cogs turning. Who would you book to play at your perfect festival? The nice people at South Bank asked. Their question rattled through my head for weeks as I sat on buses, cleared out ditches and walked the dogs. Slowly, the idea formed. Peter Green's Fleetwood Mac. Sid's Floyd. The classic Sandy Denny lineup of Fairport Convention. I wanted to witness DJ Kool Herc invent hip-hop in a park in the Bronx. Be at those early Kingston sound clashes. Shays, be realistic, demand the impossible. Convince me that this was an idea worth exploring. To be fair, the nice people at the South Bank didn't say no. Well, not straight away, but they did point out that without a time machine, all the above was unlikely, which only made me more determined to make it happen. It took a lot of emails back and forth to finally get to the stage where we had a workable plan. Low lighting, disguising the fact that the people on the stage were in fact miming to live versions of songs being blasted through the PA. Suspend all belief as you step inside. I was excited. This is going to happen, I thought. This is actually going to happen. As it turned out, the nice people at the South Bank weren't quite as excited as me. The gap between sending emails and receiving replies grew larger until, at some point, our correspondence dried up. The next I heard, the Meltdown Festival, was when Scott Walker was announced as the next curator. New Year's Eve came and went. Fireworks exploded. Animals hid. People cheered and sang, and the day after, the world looked much the same as it always had. Things do change, albeit slowly. I spent the rest of my 46th year filling notebooks with words, trying in vain to convince bus passengers that I wasn't Kevin MacLeod, and waiting for inspiration to strike.
Under Two Empty Pages by Constant Shallowness.
A Troubled Dream. Yes, Bobby, Yes, Bobby, Yes, Bobby by Johan Hultgren. Stepping off the plane, the humid heat feels like someone's slapping me in the face. Oh no, not again. I realise I'm back in Kinshasa, Congo. In the distance, I can hear some music playing. Yes, Bobby, Yes, Bobby, Yes, Bobby, Yes, Bobby. It's already dark before I find my way out of the airport. There are no more Europeans around. Everyone looks at me like I'm some kind of pop star. I can hear the kids running away screaming, Mandeli, Mandeli. I jump into one of the yellow scrap car taxis. It's me and seven others. Two people in the passenger seat, me and three others in the back seat, and two more in the boot. We are packed like sardines. We get stuck in this massive traffic jam. The engines are running. The headlights are barely working. Sometimes there are asphalt roads. The majority of the cars are going in the right direction. On the side of the road, there are great crowds of people. It feels like I'm part of The Walking Dead. On the radio, that song is back, and the driver cranks up the volume. Yes, Bobby, yes, Bobby, yes, Bobby, yes, Bobby. Suddenly, I'm on the boat again. The boat is heading up the Congo River, the engine running monotonously. Did I ever fall asleep? Small islands of turf and dead sheep passing by in the river. Glancing around, and I begin to push myself towards the other, dark side of the boat, making my way past cars, food, children, timber, and people living in between. All of a sudden, I hear that damn song again. Yes, Bobby, yes, Bobby, yes, Bobby, yes, Bobby. I discover the source. Another European person blasting movement. Blasting music from his portable Marshall speaker placed on top of a shopping trolley. He's wearing a pith helmet, cargo pants, and a t-shirt promoting Mr. Cargo Pant Man, and a picture of himself with a bullhorn. I decide to approach him. "Hello, man," he says, as he hands me a Turbo King, tepid liquid, passing itself off as the local beer. He smokes a cigar and starts to address me with a strange accent. Is it Scandinavian? Mr. Cargo Pant Man tells me he used to be a semi-professional wrestler, but having no success, he decided to be unsuccessful in other areas. Unfortunately, owing to chart success with his music, he's now on a mission to spend his money on building a pyramid in the Congolese jungle. I decide to join him as a carpenter. People will need coffins. We walk through the jungle in search of the nearest bar. The rain is pishing down. Palm trees passing by. The sun starts to shine again. The humidity is killing. As we continue, I'm feeling my boots are getting stuck in the mud. Mr. Cargo Pant Man doesn't seem to hear my cry for help. He steadily walks away into the jungle, listening to that fucking song again. Yes, Bobby, yes, Bobby, yes, Bobby, yes, Bobby!